U.S. officials are looking into how classified documents about the war in Ukraine were leaked on social media.
You can see the equipment that the U.S. and NATO have provided Ukraine, the number of those equipment that have been delivered, and when some of these are expected. So that could be really beneficial to the Russians.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is back home preparing for the fight still ahead after getting a hero's welcome while visiting neighbor Poland.
Glory to Ukraine, the crowd at the Royal Castle chanted the slogan symbolizing Ukraine's resistance to Russia invasion when the Ukrainian leader walked to the podium.
And later in the program, how Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine has created a new war generation in Ukraine. Today is Friday, April 7th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Lori London in Washington. U.S. officials at the Pentagon are investigating how the secret documents detailing U.S. and NATO help for Ukraine ended up being posted on social media channels. I spoke to VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb for more on this evolving story, which was first reported Thursday by the New York Times.
What have you been able to find out about it so far?
I have looked at the documents on Twitter, some of the documents at least. I've seen them, and they look authentic. I mean, they have top secret on the top of them. It looks like they are hard copies, maybe a day-to-day battle assessment that leaders could be briefed on. And so the Pentagon has said that it is investigating who may be behind this leak of the documents. Or it looks like a snapshot in time. They say the battle in Ukraine as of March 1st. That's the date that they give you. And if you go back to March 1st, I know that there was a meeting with Ukrainian officials at an American base in Germany, and they were going to do war game sessions. General Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, was there March 2nd. General Christopher Cavoli, the Supreme Allied Commander for Europe, he also visited those sessions at some point. So it appears that this was just a quick brief, and that potentially, if these are the real thing, somebody left them somewhere, and they were able to be picked up by an outside source who has posted them on social media. But there is another thing that officials are cautioning, that some of these documents may be doctored. We don't know at this point. The New York Times is pointing out that there was one of the slides. I have not seen this slide, but they say one slide says that about 17,000 soldiers were killed. Ukraine suffered as many as 71,500 troops deaths. This is kind of a little backwards from the type of death announcements that we've been hearing from intelligence officials from across the West throughout the war. The casualties, as I understand them, have been closer to about 200,000 Russian troops killed. Ukraine has had more than 100,000 troops killed. So we're still going to have a lot more to learn on this, but this is definitely something that can aid the Russians in their planning to push forward this spring. This is something that I'm sure that the U.S., the West, Ukraine, nobody wanted to get out there.
Are the documents, even if they are doctored, were they actual classified plans?
I'm glad you asked that. These aren't plans. These appear to be an update on the war. For example, in one of the slides, Lori, you can see the equipment that has been provided to Ukraine from Western sources. There's one slide that says there's 90 BMTs. That's a type of Soviet vehicle, infantry vehicle, 17 tanks. It goes down the line and it says, here's the equipment provided. It says, this is the equipment that has been delivered. So for example, those BMPs that I was telling you about, 90 have been provided. 90 are on hand in Ukraine, according to this slide. That type of information could be very useful to the Russians. They can know how much equipment the Ukrainian side has, how many have been delivered already, and how many, if they haven't been delivered, when they're expected. That's also on one of the slides. So that could be really damaging to the Ukrainians. However, on the flip side, the West has been pretty transparent on what it's been giving the Ukrainians. So while it will provide some sort of detail on what the U.S. and NATO has been announcing, it's not a revolutionary reveal, so to speak.
The New York Times reporting on this described these documents as secret American and NATO plans. Would it have been accurate that it was secret American and NATO?
If this is actually what I'm looking at, there's top secret classification, so it is classified, and these do appear to be U.S. and allied and partnered combat power assessments. And then on other slides, it does appear to be the U.S. and NATO assessment of the conflict. It really does look like top secret papers that were leaked, that got out of some sort of base somehow. They are handheld papers, the documents that I'm looking at, and they have creases in them, like somebody folded them and took them with them when they weren't supposed to. Like the New York Times is saying, some of the things do not add up on one of the slides that I haven't seen. The killed in action, the casualty numbers seem very, very low on the Russian side and seem closer to normal on the Ukrainian side. So it looks like they doctor the number of Russian deaths to make it appear that Ukraine has suffered more deaths. None of the intelligence that we have been getting throughout this conflict would add up to that. In fact, the one document that I saw that appears to not be doctored, a snapshot of some part of the battlefield, says that the Russian killed in action is 44,000, while the Ukrainian killed in action is about 18,000. Pentagon officials say that they are investigating to see how this was leaked.
VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb. Ukrainian officials say the plans looked like a Russian disinformation operation to sow doubts about Ukraine's planned counteroffensive. Meanwhile, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and his top brass met on Friday to discuss ways to prevent leaks of military information. President Zelensky on Wednesday wrapped up his first official visit to Poland since the start of Russia's full-scale invasion of his country. On the one-day visit, the Ukrainian leader thanked his Polish host for standing, in Zelensky's words, shoulder to shoulder with Ukraine in what he described as a historic relationship. VOA Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Mirosława Gongadze reports from Warsaw.
The hero's welcome for Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in Warsaw, his first trip to the Polish capital since Russia launched its war on Ukraine. Glory to Ukraine, the crowd at the Royal Castle chanted the slogan symbolizing Ukraine's resistance to Russia invasion when the Ukrainian leader walked to the podium. He responded, "Glory to heroes." He addressed the crowd in both Ukrainian and Polish.
Slava Ukraini!
Glory to Ukraine. Glory to heroes. Greetings to Warsaw. Greetings to Poland, the great nation of Poland, the great nation of Ukraine. We are shoulder to shoulder together on this square, united by the spirit of freedom.
Zelensky thanked Poland for its leadership in supporting Ukraine, emphasizing his view that it is crucial to act now to stop Russian aggression.
It is important to continue to be united. When the battle needs artillery, it has to be provided. When the victory needs tanks, its roar sound must be heard on the front line. When independence needs air support, don't look at what will be the reaction in Russia.
Poland's President Andrzej Duda spoke in support of President Zelensky's plea to the world, pointing out that Poland is setting an example of solidarity and partnership.
Ukraina potrzebuje wsparcia.
Ukraine needs support, needs the supply of modern military equipment. Poland is and will be one of the leaders of such support. We know well those who defend their home, who defend the homeland. They need support there, and there is no time for waiting.
Analysts at the Kiel Institute for the World Economy, a German think tank, say Poland is the world's fourth most generous provider of overall support to Ukraine relative to its GDP, after the Baltic states, all in a strong partnership with the United States. Polish Foreign Ministry spokesman Lukasz Jasina points to a new alliance that has formed since the beginning of the war.
Firstly, there was no Ukrainian-American-Polish relations before this war. Now this triangle is a fact. Triangle in arms, triangle in economical support for Ukraine, triangle in political support of Ukraine. There won't be any travel of Mr. Zelensky to Washington without Polish support, and there won't be any transport of arms without Polish support.
Poland has committed more than 270 tanks to Ukraine. During the visit, Poland pledged an additional 4 MiG fighter jets, paving the way for the Western countries to provide Ukraine with combat aircraft. Zelensky's visit on April 5th comes as Ukraine prepares for major counteroffensive. The only way to stop the war, says Przemysław Grójewski, advisor to the Polish Foreign Ministry, is for Ukraine to win it.
There is the
common conviction in Poland that the only way to end the war is to defeat Russia. Not because it's easy, but because if Russia is not defeated, the war will not be ended. Russian imperial ambitions know only those borders that are drawn by the military power of the nations threatened by them.
He believes that to avoid the next war, the West must deploy forces to the border of Ukraine and Russia after Ukraine recaptures its territory. Mirosława Gongadze, VOA News, Warsaw, Poland.
China's leader has called for peace talks over Ukraine after France's president urged him to, quote, bring Russia to its senses. AP correspondent Karen Chamis reports.
At a joint news briefing in Beijing, China's Xi Jinping said, resume peace talks as soon as possible, in accordance with the purposes and principles of the UN Charter, take into account the legitimate security concerns of all parties. Xi, however, gave France's President Emmanuel Macron no assurances that he would use his close diplomatic relationship with Russia's President Vladimir Putin as leverage to push for peace. Beijing sees Moscow as a strategic partner in the face of US domination in global affairs. Whilst China's government has tried to remain neutral, it has given Putin diplomatic support and has repeated Russian justifications for the February 2022 attack. I'm Karen Chamas.
French President Emmanuel Macron was accompanied to Beijing by European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen in a show of European unity. Von der Leyen said she encouraged China's president to call Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky.
We discussed and I raised the topic. I encouraged President Xi to reach out to President Zelensky. I know from my phone calls that, and President Zelensky asked for it publicly. So it was interesting to hear that President Xi reiterated his willingness to speak when conditions and time are right. I think this is a positive element. We also count on China not to provide any military equipment directly or indirectly to Russia, because we all know arming the aggressor would be against international law and it would significantly harm our relationship.
China is the biggest buyer of Russian oil and gas, which helps prop up the Kremlin's revenue in the face of Western sanctions. That increases China's influence, but Xi appears reluctant to jeopardize that partnership by pressuring Putin. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Lori London. Before the war, their jobs had nothing to do with the military, but today they are volunteers fighting to expel Russian forces from Ukraine's Donbas region. Anna Kutstuchenko talked with some of these soldiers.
Their task is to disembark from the armored personnel vehicle as quickly as possible and take combat positions in the trenches. This is just training, but these fighters have already seen the front lines in combat. Somebody's abandoned house in a village near Bakhmut became their second home, says 40-year-old Vasil, who won't give his last name for security reasons. He was a music teacher in the Lviv region before volunteering for Ukraine's armed forces in August 2022. He gets letters and drawings from his students.
Just yesterday, I received a package with drawings and dumplings that my students made for me. Often in their letters, they ask when I will return. Well, it's not up to me. I will return when the war is over.
One of Vasil's comrades is 39-year-old Artem from Chernihiv. Artem used to run an IT business. In May of last year, he went to the front lines as a volunteer. Since then, near constant shelling has been his daily companion, but he's shaken every time one of his comrades gets hit.
It can happen at any moment. Recently, we suffered the loss of some of our best guys.
Oleg, a
29-year-old farmer from the Lviv region, feels the same way. He recalls not believing Russia's invasion was actually happening at first.
I am a pacifist by belief. Even when there was already information that the war started, I said, what kind of war could start when it is time to plant seeds soon?
Andriy, another farmer before the war, joined as a volunteer fighter in March 2022. He was wounded by shrapnel earlier this year, but is now back on the front lines.
I want to protect us and throw the enemy back behind the border, so our children and grandchildren would not know what it feels like to lose a normal, peaceful life we all had before.
To all of these men, the main dream is to win the war and come back to their families.
The main thing that keeps us going is probably the support of loved ones, friends, and the whole civilized world. We hear that weapons are coming and feel the support from the world expressed either in posts on Twitter or in donations and prayers.
Anna Kostyuchenko for VOA News, Donetsk region, Ukraine.
A Russian military blogger who was an ardent supporter of the war in Ukraine was killed in an explosion at a St. Petersburg cafe on Sunday. Russia claims he was a war correspondent. Polygraph Info explains why this determination is false.
On April 2nd, Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova criticized the lack of Western reaction to the death of Maxim Fomin, the Russian pro-war military blogger who was killed earlier that day in an explosion in a St. Petersburg cafe. Referring to Fomin as a war correspondent, Zakharova said, quote, "Today, the lack of reaction from the White House, Downing Street, Elysee Palace, etc., given their ostensible concern for journalist well-being, is self-revelatory. That is false." Fomin, who blogged under the pseudonym Vladlen Tatarsky, was no war correspondent. Rather, he was a Kremlin propagandist who called for Ukraine's destruction and the murder of Ukrainians. His channel on the Telegram Messenger had more than 570,000 subscribers. In 2011, Fomin was sentenced to 12 years in prison for armed bank robbery. In 2014, after Russia launched its clandestine military invasion of eastern Ukraine, Fomin escaped from prison and joined pro-Russian militia in the Donbass. Fomin fully supported Russia's invasion of Ukraine, stating that its primary goal is the complete destruction of the Ukrainian state. Last September, he called for strikes to destroy power plants in Ukraine so that more Ukrainians would die in hospitals.
Polygraph.info is a fact-checking website produced by Voice of America. The website serves as a resource for verifying the increasing volume of disinformation and misinformation being distributed and shared globally. Uncertainty during the first few weeks of Russia's full-scale assault on Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, drove many people out of the city. Officials say 44% of the capital's population fled. Some, including many young people, though, stayed, and 1 year later say their lives have been transformed forever. Anna Chernikova has the story of one couple who spent the first days of the Russian assault living in a metro station.
Kate and George Tokarenko are among millions of young Ukrainian couples whose lives were shaken and transformed a year ago.
When Russia invaded Ukraine on February 24, 2022,
they found themselves facing a life-changing decision: to leave their home city or stay. If they were to leave, where would they go and for how long? Every minute, it seemed, they wondered what was next.
We gathered some of our belongings, had breakfast and sat down, started watching the news. We were in shock all day, in such a strange state when you don't understand what's going on.
In the end, they decided to stay in Kyiv.
We realized that we were making the right decision to stay in Kyiv because there was a relative sense of security. We understood that Kyiv would be defended and that we would definitely not be lost in Kyiv.
I did not want to leave Kyiv at all. I wanted to be here. I felt safe. I had no doubts that everything would be fine.
Then the unimaginable happened. Russian forces targeted Kyiv. Intense shelling began, and the young couple took cover in the city's metro system for the first several nights. The experience was life-changing.
We were right at this spot when we went down to the subway several times during the fiercest battles for Kyiv. We were completely unprepared for this. We took our two cats, we were with a friend, and the two of us. The first night was terrible. To be honest, I don't even understand how we were preparing to stay here. The second time we came down here, we were already better prepared. We took blankets to sit on, even some pillows. We tried to make ourselves comfortable, but it's very cold in the subway at night, so it didn't help us much.
What really touched me was that people here were always helping us. At first, they asked if we had everything we need and offered some food. And on the second night, the subway workers kept coming up, inviting us for tea, all kinds of goodies and food. In general, there was a feeling that the people who were here were taken care of.
In September 2022, they decided life could not wait, and the couple were married. But it wasn't the only major change. The war transformed their worldview and sense of identity.
We spoke Russian in everyday life before everything happened. Now we understand that we want to raise our children in the Ukrainian language, and we ourselves switched to the Ukrainian language.
To them, Russia was never a friend. But they, like many Ukrainians, saw it as a relative from the past. Today, Kate and George say that, for them, that feeling is gone.
The war made it clear what Ukraine is and who Ukrainians are. I think this feeling will last forever.
And their focus has grown to include the fate of their nation, not just their own.
There will be no more passivity. We create our future. And we cannot wait for some other proactive people to decide this future for us.
Kate and George's story reflects the war's long-lasting impact on Ukraine's young people. A new war generation with a redefined sense of nationhood, nearly 32 years after Ukraine gained independence. Anna Chernikova for VOA News, Kyiv.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And on social media, just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thank you so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Lori London.
This is the voice of America, Washington, D.C.